Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
All right, it's fight week on FS1. Speak for Yourself with Jason Whitlock. Marcellus Wiley coming to you live from Las Vegas, presented by Hyundai, counting down to the Deontay Wilder-Tyson Fury rematch on Saturday. All right, hello and welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. We're joined today by LeVar Arrington and TJ Houshmandzadeh. Coming up, the champ is here. Deontay Wilder will be live right here on our set. Plus, the CEO of Mayweather Productions, Leonard Ellerbe, will be here. But we start where we love to start here, the NFL. A little more than 20 years ago, I was in the exact same position as Dak Prescott. I had just completed my fifth year as a franchise columnist for the Kansas City Star. I was looking to expand my reach and add value to my rookie contract by hooking on with the then worldwide leader in sports, ESPN.com. At the time, a guy named Neil Scarborough was the Jerry Jones of ESPN.com. He offered me a deal below my market value. But I knew working alongside Ralph Wiley, Hunter S. Thompson, and Bill Simmons on page two would enhance my brand and create money-making opportunities elsewhere. I was in my early 30s and realized I would have multiple opportunities to break the bank later. I took the below-market deal and bet on myself because I believed I was the best in the business. Dak Prescott clearly doesn't believe he's the best in the business. I don't even believe he believes he's one of the best in the business. His approach to his contract negotiations looks like a man cashing a once-in-a-lifetime lottery ticket rather than a young superstar building a career as a franchise quarterback. Other people are starting to see what I see, including Cowboys legend and Hall of Famer Emmitt Smith. Emmitt stated during an interview this week that Dak needs a new perspective on his contract. Take a listen.
Dak has to understand and maybe take another perspective. The perspective may not be all the money that you get. It may be how much of the money you're willing to leave on the table, because the Cowboys is a marketable organization.
And so if you got all that extra money, that's
so
not
if you are the face of the franchise, would it not, instead of taking 35, would you take 28 and leave some for Amari and pick up the other 35 through endorsements?
Emmitt Smith agrees with me. $28 million is the right price for Dak Prescott. Emmitt's take has been ridiculed on social media and by some members of the media. Some people find it hypocritical that Emmitt would advise Dak to settle for less money when, as a player, Emmitt held out and forced Jerry Jones to pay him record money. There are several differences between Emmitt Smith and Dak Prescott. The lifespan of a running back is much shorter, and when Emmitt held out, no one questioned Emmitt's value to the Cowboys or whether Emmitt was one of the 10 best players in the league at the time. Dak isn't in the top 50, but he wants to be paid like he's in the top 5. It doesn't make sense. Not to me, not to Emmitt, not to Jerry Jones. Dak looks scared to bet on himself because he knows he'll never be better than he was last season. All right, Marcellus, get us rolling.
Man.
Do you have an issue first with Emmitt Smith commenting on Dak's money?
I'm glad you know me so well. Yeah. The way you're looking at me, you know I got a problem with this.
Man, Emmitt Smith got caught up in the spell of Jerry Jones as well. He's right now going to be a guy who sounds like a great ambassador. Sounds like he's being a great employee, but not a great frat brother from the same fraternity he played in, the same fraternity that he had to hold out because of his value. So if I'm looking at Emmitt Smith, I'm like, bruh, you know what the game is about. M&Ms, two things, rookie year, playing against Shannon Sharp as I'm getting drugged up and down that field. He said, pick your head up, rookie. It's only about M&Ms, money, and memories. Those are the only two things you take away from the game of football. And nobody knows that better than Emmitt Smith. So I don't like the idea of taking a pay cut because of endorsements. So you trying to tell me that if I were to get $35 million, Campbell Soup should come to me and say, hey, man, you're making so much money over there. You should take this endorsement for less. It makes no sense. There are two different line items that people are trying to conflate because they want to think about the team game. CBA is going up. Values and contracts are going up. Quarterbacks are getting paid more. Dak deserves his value, and Emmitt knows that better than anybody.
Emmitt Smith is being a hypocrite, for sure. It's no question. Now, $35 million to 33, I'll take that. 35 to 28, I'm not taking that pay cut. That's way too much of a pay cut to take. Now, Emmitt Smith is going from experience here. He's looking at it from the perspective of, I didn't realize how much money I could really make off the field when I was playing. He sees how much he's making off the field now, and he's trying to give Dak Prescott some advice. Bro, you play for the Cowboys for your whole career. You're going to make this after you retire. He sees that now, so that's just advice that he's giving that he didn't know when he was playing. The value that the Cowboys have when you play for them is so long after you retire, he's going to make so many more appearances and make so much more money. But 35 to 28, I might can go to 32. I'm not going to 28.
You know, I don't have an issue with him saying it because I think it's coming from a genuine place. I mean, I think going into it, we all know that he held out for more money. We all know who Emmitt Smith is. He has a ton of credibility as it applies to the game. I think what he's doing here is not only offering advice, but he's trying to offer some perspective that can keep him from getting to a catastrophic happening for possibly Prescott's career. How's it catastrophic? Well, think about if he continues to say, I'm going to stay where I'm at with what I'm demanding and what I want in terms of money, and people like Emmitt Smith are hearing, we ain't giving him that money. You're not getting that money. You're continuing on this freight train of a collision, and Dak Prescott is not going to win this collision. And I think that's what's taking place right now. So the only reason why I don't see him as a hypocrite or see him as being someone that's out of pocket or not being a good frat brother.
That makes no sense.
It makes
it
a ton
that
of
makes
sense.
No sense.
I think it makes, it makes a ton of sense.
Well, you said you do the same thing that if you've done the same thing that he might do, that's hypocritical.
TJ,
that makes no sense.
TJ, there was not a dollar that they could give Emmitt Smith that when he walked in that locker room at that time, everybody, oh, he deserves that. Emmitt knows if they give Dak $35 million, there will be a percentage, 20, 30, 40, half the team be like, damn, they paid Dak that? He doesn't deserve it.
I'm with you with the 35.
Completely
but what if
different?
They're not going to give it to him at all?
Well, again, that's why they're not going
to give it to him at all.
But y'all acting like this whole situation and Emmitt talking like he's talking doesn't resonate with this group as well and saying, man, Emmitt, that's how you play the game? The way the game is played is you get yourself up to a perceived value. We keep talking in this absolute sense that Dak is this level player, so he deserves this amount of money. It's never been that way. Jimmy Garoppolo did not deserve the money he got. Jared Goff did not deserve the money he got. And Dak may be in that same conversation.
But you're acting like that's martial law. That's not law.
But that is called...
It's interpretation.
It's called present value. Look, I love you, Jerry Jones. I'm a former Cowboy. I ain't shining boots for the rest of my life because guess what? It comes at a cost to take a pay cut to see you when I retire, and then I got to be on this leash.
But you're
leash.
Saying perceived value. If Emmitt Smith is sitting there saying to you in code... that your perceived value is not what you think your perceived value is, then what's
he's
the
talking
acting about?
Company line. Look, respect. I'm a.
Why is he talking to company line?
You know he is.
LT. I'll give it to you. LT is an ambassador for the Chargers. I'm what they call a legend. You know what the difference is? I can say what the hell I want. They still gonna look out for me. LT. You know, let's make sure we got the
LaDainian
company line. LaDainian Thomas. Yeah. That I'm talking about. It happens with every team. There are legends. There are ambassadors. Emmitt Smith walked away from money when he was with the Cowboys because they released him. Had to come back, start a relationship again with Jerry Jones, and he's making a ton of money. Why does Dak have to take that same course? Why can't Dak
he's giving him good
now?
Advice.
He's not giving basing him, his advice off.
Yeah, hold on. You said he's giving him good advice, or how could he be wrong?
That's going
because
too.
35 to 28, he's giving him good advice because he's looking at it from the perspective of, I didn't realize when I was playing the value of being a Cowboy.
TJ, why isn't he looking at it the way I'm looking at it? You're not worth $35 million. You're not that. You don't deserve as much money as Russell Wilson. If they give you that 35, when you walk in that locker room, the same dudes have been smiling and patting you on the back
are now going to turn jealous and look at you the same way that Emmitt Smith is maybe if of you're not worth
hell
it.
And no. I know where you're going.
Hold on, let me give you one last thing. Emmitt Smith walked back into that locker room after holding out and was MVP of the league and carried that team to the Super Bowl. Is Dak Prescott, after he gets his money, he going to be MVP?
I mean, we would say no.
We would say no, but he had a career year. I would say this. People forget about present value, present dollar value. Look, you're trying to tell me to take $7 million annually off the books right now instead of investing that so I can circle back around, be Jerry's best friend, and get money when I retire? You know how much money I lost by not investing that in today's market versus coming back later and hoping I get some autographs?
Here's what Emmitt's saying, or certainly what I'm saying.
You're not going
to get it. I'm saying take a little less for the next couple years. Go out and prove. If you really this quarterback that's worth that money, you got three more contracts coming to you. The dude is only 26.
Does he? Everyone thinks that the future's forever until it's not. Guess what? I already earned $35 million. That's why they offered me $33 million before I had a career year. If you have a career year after a $33 million offer, Jason Whitlock, are you taking that 28?
Well, first of all, any career year I had looked a lot better than what Dak just put on record.
I can't talk to you right now.
And not in the playoffs. I'm just sorry. That's not a career year. You can go check my receipts as a journalist. It never I never
Emmys,
finished 8-8.
Oscars everywhere.
I never finished 8-8.
All right.
And so I'm just sorry. Dak, it sounds like we beating up on Dak, but Emmitt Smith likes Dak. I like
Don't
Dak.
Don't say y'all are. I'm not beating up on
you
him.
You are beating up on him.
No, I'm saying he's not worth 28, 30. Wait. Everybody else, would y'all take $28, $30 million?
Man, that is
it's all relevant.
How about that? They just got hit on the crap table. I know Dak Prescott is fifth all-time in passer rating. I know that his coach now has the guy, Aaron Rodgers, who was first all-time in passer rating. I know that Mike McCarthy is a quarterback whisperer, and we keep saying he can't win MVP. We also said he couldn't have a career year like he did in terms of numbers. I think there's going to be an elevation in his game. You think 35 is too much? Let Dak go out there one more time with the quarterback whisperer. It might be like Patrick Mahomes. It might
and
be
I would, 40. Look, if that's the case, I'd love to pay it to him, and I'll flip my argument. If Dak went out, led the team to a 12-4 record and put up great numbers, threatened to be like a touchdown leader, a passing touchdown, did with Lamar, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson.
Put the team on your back.
I'm for giving him the money. He's not a – they putting the team on Zeke's back. They putting the team on the offensive line's back. Dak is an 8-8 quarterback.
He is not. Don't do that to him.
Again, when he leads the league
but
in
so
passing, he's
and
an
I
eight.
Would wonder what Emmitt Smith – and listen, I'm not going – again, I stay true to the – I don't have an issue with it. But his boy, he was out there defending Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah.
But Zeke held out.
And he
Zeke
did
Zeke held out. So I just
–
I look at it like this.
Zeke is worth it. Dak's not.
Well, no,
who had a better year last year? Thank you. Who has a second most win since they've been in the league as a quarterback?
With an 8-8 season.
I gave you an 8-8.
Zach Martin, the offensive guard. He got more to do with them wins.
I give you an average year, 8-8, and I'm still second most wins in the NFL since I've been a quarterback. Dak's a winner. He's put this team on his back. 13-3 as a rookie.
Jerry Jones is a winner.
Look, and Jerry Jones need to cut
Jason
that check.
Jason Garrett's a winner.
Instead of cutting a check for friendship.
Look, hold on.
I don't need no friendship check.
But again, Jason Garrett got let go. He was a part of all them victories that Dak was. They can fire Jason Garrett, but Dak's untouchable and he deserves a record contract. I just don't buy it. I think, and I said it here, I think he looks scared with the unwillingness to bet on himself. When you really know you the man, you bet on yourself. Like, okay, I'm going to give me this $28 million. Give me this $29 million. I'm going
to
go out here and show
that's
y'all.
That's what he just
and
did.
And I'm going
to
be back at the table.
He just bet on himself this year. When they offered him that contract, no.
And you know what? He lost.
He bet on himself.
He needs to do it again. He lost. They're not giving it to him.
Everything around me is going up, and I got to go down when I'm having my best year, career year. I'm sorry. Zeke held out.
Go up
but
every
why
year.
Do we keep saying he's got to go down? I keep hearing you use pay cut and go down.
From a $33 million offer to Emmitt Smith said 28. Isn't that
a
down?
I think Emmitt threw 28 out there as throwing 28. Just he's giving numbers. I don't think that was.
Yeah, that's what Emmitt.
I don't think that was factual.
That's what Emmitt knew what he was saying.
But what I'm saying is what his offer is. What is he making now? He's got a rookie contract right now. Everything that he gets in payment from here on out is going up. It's going up.
It's going up. Money.
He's going to get a veteran
that
contract.
That 33 last year was new money on a per year salary. Would not have been 28 when you add in the salary he made last year. That would have probably brought him in around $28 million. Now you go 33 in real money on the per-year average. I think that would be enough. Last year, it wouldn't have been 33 per year. It would have just been 33 in new money when you bring in what he made last year. It would have dropped the average to about 28, 29.
We cannot conflate cost, value, and dollars. You have a home. It costs so much. What's the equity? What's the perceived value? A lot more, hopefully. Therefore, you don't sell at anything less than what that perceived value is. Dak has made $4 million on the field of football.
You ain't buying.
But his equity and perceived value is right now $33, $35 million. Why would he ever look at taking less?
People do not buy homes at perceived values. They buy it at market value.
I don't know where you live. Yes, they are.
You buy it at market value. Well, that might be a different place. That's why you have comps.
The guy wants $35 million a year. To me, and what Emmitt is saying is like, oh, you think you're a top five quarterback. And I don't think there's anyone sitting here at this desk or in this audience that thinks Dak Prescott is a top five quarterback. Does anybody think Dak Prescott's one of the five best quarterbacks in the NFL?
Does anybody think Carson Wentz is? Thank you. Why is Carson Wentz making 32 and a half? Why is Jared Goff? Is Jared Goff top five?
No, he did not.
Why is Jared Goff making 33?
He didn't play.
Why does Jared Goff make it 33?
Because someone thought foolishly that he could be a top five quarterback.
What's your ceiling? 28 for Dak? That's your ceiling?
That's what I think he's worth. I'd probably pay him 30 just to settle this. But again, he's off in some fantasy world, and to me, he looks scared. If he's what he thinks he is, go ahead and take that money, come back, play for Mike McCarthy, and go out and show everybody your worth.
To me, scared would be taking that money.
Whatever they
are. I don't believe in myself.
So I'm going to tell you.
He's saying, I believe in myself so much, franchise me. I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
I'm going to remember this when our contract's up because our show's killing it. And next time they're going to say, oh, do it again. And you'll be like, nah, dog, already did it. Well, Dak did it already.
I'm just going to say this. The first time this show goes 8-8 will be the first and last time. We ain't never went 8-8. And if we do, everybody's getting fired.
We talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. For LeBron James, sleep is an important part of his mental fitness routine. He says, getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind. And if you head to calm.com/sports40, you'll get 40% off a Calm premium membership. With Calm, you have access to nature scenes LeBron loves and so much more, like sleep stories and meditations. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/sports40. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/sports40. That's calm.com/sports40.
LeVar Arrington and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. It's time now for a big story. Sponsored by KFC. Feed the whole family with KFC's $20 fill up with all the fixes.
Oh, yeah.
Order online at KFC.com. All right, let's move to the NFL, where there could be some big changes coming. Reportedly, the owners have been summoned to New York for a meeting about a possible new collective bargaining agreement. According to Adam Schefter, the proposal would shake up the regular season and much more. In 2020, the playoff field would increase from 12 to 14, with 6 games on the wild card weekend, and the players' revenue share would grow to 48%. And the next year, the regular season would expand to 17 games. The preseason would be reduced to 3 games, and the players would get another revenue bump up to 48.5%. All right, guys. What do you guys think of this idea? Good idea?
Good idea. I really like it. I don't fully love it because part of this feels like they're trying to put some of the milk back in the carton. Last decade, before the last CBA, players were at 50% in terms of revenue share. And now they're going from 47 to 48 and a half, which is nothing to sneeze at, because that's a $5 billion with a B dollar windfall back to the players. But it's still kind of making up for lost efforts and work of the past. That said, we're going to see some competitive football at the top in the standings. If there's only one team with a bye, fighting for number two, imagine Kansas City had to go on the road in this new proposal. I mean, play at home against Pittsburgh, a dangerous team. You don't want those kind of scenarios. So just in totality, I like a lot of the moves. We're seeing more money for the players. We're seeing greater benefits, everything, except they should have already been at 50%. I don't feel like we're moving forward yet.
I like it. I'm with you. I was a player rep for 7 years, and is what you said. We're getting 50%. The new CBA, it dropped drastically. And so I would like to see it closer to 50%. And if it's not going to be closer to 50%, the players need to worry about the benefits. Because let's be honest. The top players, there's five or six players on every team that's going to make big money. This CBA is going to affect the bottom of the roster guys, where worry about your benefits. Benefits. It ain't about, oh, I'm going to get an extra $15,000, $20,000 on my base salary. Because when you're done playing, like we are, and you got to worry about insurance and benefit, it's the benefits. It's not so much, oh, it's going to increase my base salary by $25,000 per year. It's the benefits. If you're not getting better benefits, it's not a great idea.
I like the idea of it, man. And let's address CBA. What does CBA mean?
Collective.
Collective. Collective who? Like everybody involved, right?
Bargaining.
So that deal that was done, there was two sides that had to come to the table, the players and the league. So that deal was done by the players and the league.
Yeah.
So, I mean, with all due respect, I can understand they should have, could have, would have, but this deal was done by the players and the league. So when you're looking at it from that angle and then you're saying, okay, well, you're going to get a percent here and then you're going to get a half a percent here and it's going to create more money, nothing from nothing leaves nothing. So as it stands right now, they're not making that money. That money is not there. So they do this deal, for one, you and I both know. Y'all know we played this game. Ain't nobody checking for a preseason. We ain't checking for a preseason. And the only game we checking for in the preseason is number what?
Three.
Number three. It's the only one we checking for.
I want to stop you guys there because y'all haven't addressed, just from a fan's perspective, the extra game. What do y'all think of that?
I like it.
I don't mind the extra game. I like that.
You hear me?
But I was about to address it.
What about one team getting a bye? Only one team would get a bye. I like
it. It's going to make the game so much more competitive at the end of the season.
Yes.
You're not going to see, oh, is Harbaugh and the Ravens going to rest Lamar Jackson?
Nah,
you ain't resting him because you want that bye.
Right.
So the games at the end of the season will matter so much more.
The preseason, I've told fans this all the time, and they thought I wasn't committed to the game. I don't want to play in the preseason. You know why? Because I just left the lower level of college football, and I didn't have a preseason game ever.
Not one.
But then I get to the pros, and you give me four of them, when all you're trying to do is extract money from the fans. Say it what it is, but why am I getting dressed up, potentially getting injured in a game that's meaningless? So you can wipe out all the preseason. As long as you pay me for a regular season game, I'm raising my hand
and
to play
again,
in that.
You're taking one away and you're adding it to the regular season. Yeah. I think when we had this conversation before, I made that very point. Take a game away.
They can
don't
take
add
two
a
away.
Game. Don't
they
add.
Can take
you
all
can take
of them
all
away.
Away.
Stop.
Play
all
one preseason game.
For what?
17 games, play one preseason game.
I understand the lesser players, the lower end of the roster needs to
play. See, y'all don't know about that. Y'all know, y'all came in the league up here. The preseason for me helped me because I came in here.
Practice
that,
didn't help?
No.
Practice it, couldn't help.
But how many times have you heard a coach say, oh, man, you look
reps.
Good in T-shirts and shorts, so you look good
there
in practice when you know you're not getting
and
hit.
There's a lot of guys
they
that
want to see you
well.
In the game, yeah. Do something in the preseason. So you had you to me, you need two preseason games because there's guys that make teams by balling in the preseason. These coaches go in that meeting and say, man, I didn't know he was that good.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. But, again, with that being said,
not.
You're not getting the other team's best shot either. So you're going out
fine,
there, you're giving good
you're
game reps,
at it
but
from
you're
the
not
second pick
that.
Perspective.
I was the second pick in the draft.
One more thing I want y'all to address.
I don't like that.
One more thing I want y'all to address. We hear so much about player safety and health concerns. The extra game. That
no, but it's not an extra game. If you're taking it from the preseason, it's really not an extra
well,
game.
Well, the intensity is different, certainly that. I just want to go back. Well, one, let me address this. When we look at the 17-game schedule, it's all about compensation because at the end of a 16-game season, you can still play football because there's a postseason. So let's not act like we can add one more game. If it's fully compensated, I think guys are open-minded to
sure.
it. the preseason part really sticks with me because these are people who are highly paid to evaluate. And most of a 53-man roster, 47 slots are already guaranteed.
Pretty much.
Because of business, because of contracts, because whatever. There's only six guys. You're trying to tell me you're going to put everyone in harm's way for only six opportunities for guys when you could do that in practice?
You know what they really need to change is the active-inactive list. If you're on a roster, everybody should be active. You shouldn't have an inactive list. Everybody should be active.
We got to wrap. Leonard Ellaby's going to come up. But I just want to say one thing before we go. And normally, you know, I get accused. I'm a shield for the NFL. I don't like this deal because of the 48%.
No, it should be 50%. Right.
What people really don't understand, I'm a shield for players. I'm constantly up here trying to educate the players on how to take advantage of this game and how to get their money right and benefit from this game. And to me, and I'm sorry, Roger Goodell, I'm sorry, NFL ownership. If I was the players, I wouldn't be satisfied with just 48%. I wish these damn players would come holler at me because D'Amore Smith, I don't like this deal. Joining us now is the CEO of the Money Team, Mayweather Productions, Leonard Ellaby. Leonard, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. All right, listen, now we'll get to Floyd here in a minute, but just how big is this fight, Wilder Fury? It feels as big to me as some of the Tyson fights when he got out of jail and there was a lot of excitement and hype.
It's a huge, huge event. You have two major entities coming together, Fox and ESPN. The promotion has been incredible. You've seen all the ads and all the commercials everywhere. There's a tremendous buzz all over the city and around the nation. It's a huge fight.
Yeah, now let's see how we can convert that buzz into buys. As I'm standing next to a guy who runs Floyd's Productions, top three pay-per-views all time, Floyd is involved in all three of those. Where do you think this is going to land in terms of magnitude of buys, pay-per-views, and also after effect?
Well, it depends because times have changed. There's this thing called piracy. So there's so many opportunities out there that people have, you know, illegally streamed the pay-per-views. So it just depends. The promotion behind this event has been incredible. Both guys have done an incredible job with promoting this event. And again, I think it's a huge, huge event.
Leonard, you tweeted something, I think today or yesterday. I asked Tyson Fury a question about the racial element because boxing has generally leaned into, when there's a black fighter and a white fighter, they've leaned into that. They haven't done that in this fight. Why?
Well, you have two guys who have two big personalities. And their accomplishments in the ring speaks for themselves. So I don't think race is a part of this particular fight. You have seen it. It has been in other fights. But in this particular fight, you have two classy individuals who are great self-promoters. And they've done a phenomenal job with promoting this event thus far.
So let's skip ahead to Saturday night. How do you see going from the first fight to the second fight when he gets knocked down, he gets back up, he's pretty much outboxing him the whole fight. How do you see Deontay making adjustments to make this fight a little easier for him and or Fury making adjustments to making the fight easier for him?
Actually, I have Wilder knocking him out early. Mm. He made the necessary adjustments the second half of the fight. Fury, he was outboxing him early in the fight, but Deontay, he saw some things and he made some slight adjustments in the fight. And I actually have him stopping him pretty early in this fight because he's been in there and he's experienced his power and he sees what he brings to the table. And in Fury's case, he's also seen the same things. But I think going into this fight, Wilder has a tremendous advantage.
We're talking about two undefeated heavyweights in their prime fighting each other in their prime. And then we talk about where will they land in terms of history and lore. You being with the champ, the best ever, TBE, these guys have a chance to really climb that mountain and maybe Mount Rushmore in terms of heavyweights? Any of these guys?
Yes, I think over a period of time, there are a number of other heavyweights out there that make for big fights. But Deontay has a mission, one name, one face, one champion. And I think that he'll go out there and he'll come out on top on Saturday night, and I think he'll do it in devastating fashion.
Leonard, you and Floyd carried boxing for a long time. But nothing lifts boxing more than heavyweights and a big heavyweight fight. So I'm saying a rising tide lifts all boats. If this fight is what we think it can be, do you see all of boxing benefiting and every boxer in every class benefiting from a great fight on Saturday?
Well, I have to tend to disagree with you slightly on that. Floyd, he put the entire sport on his back for almost a decade and a half.
Yep. He can't lift as much weight as a heavyweight, though.
But it's okay. He was making that heavyweight money.
Green print.
And that's all that matters, huh?
That's all that matters.
The first boxer ever to make over $1 billion in the sport. And just
Floyd was great for Floyd. Yeah. I'm talking about these guys could benefit everybody, though, maybe in a way Floyd couldn't.
Well, Jason, how do you think the fighters are making the record purses that they make now? Floyd Mayweather is the one that went out there and established the blueprint. He controlled the landscape. He put the entire sport on his back. He showed the fighters that there were no longer two promoters in the sport who were controlling the sport. He showed the fighters that you could take an active interest, you could create your own brand and your own business, and when you go out and generate the money, you can become the banker.
And because
Hold on, for 1 second. If Floyd were a heavyweight, though, could he have done more? I mean, come on now, keep it real. Heavyweights carry the game.
Well, again, that
knockout.
I don't know. Marvin Hagler, Sugar Ray Robinson, Sugar Ray Leonard. You could go all different weight classes at different times have really carried the torch. And Floyd, you talking about the boat that rose the tide. It was Floyd Mayweather who brought the currency to the game that was heavyweight to the point where some people are still speculating, is he coming back? So is Floyd making a comeback since they're giving away this money now?
He changed the entire landscape again. He generated the revenue. His events were
Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Generated revenue like the Super Bowl. There's no other fighter been able to do that. And it has benefited all the fighters now because, again, each and every fighter out there, they're making record purses now. There were two promoters, who Bob and Don, who were controlling the sport. And Floyd changed the entire mindset of the fighters, and everyone's winning now.
I love you, CEO, but I said, is Floyd making a comeback? Because all this money out here, baby.
Well, you never know with Money Mayweather. You never know. I think his vision is that if there's a big event and there's something, a reason for him to do something, you know, like, you know, what he kind of talked about before.
McGregor?
Who knows? Anything's possible.
Because of what you just said, all the things you just said, does Mayweather have a point about being athlete of the decade over LeBron?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. I have the utmost respect for what Bron and his entire team has done for their sport and done for the community and as a whole. But when you talk about the accomplishments and what Floyd has been able to do over two decades, Floyd Mayweather is definitely the fighter of the decade. Listen, I mean, athlete of the decade.
Yeah, 100%.
I want to be clear on this because I think I don't want you to think I'm trying to diminish Floyd. I'm not. It takes mass to move mass, though. We know that about weightlifting and just all of that. I'm not trying to. I think it's great what Floyd has done. And the point you made about breaking the chains that Don King and other promoters had control over the game, I think that is truly Floyd's legacy in terms of giving the fighters their independence. I just think he could have done more if he were a heavyweight.
If he were bigger.
Well, he just happened to be a five division world champion and broke all the records. So it is what it is. We're thankful that in my eyes he's TBE.
Let's go back to this fight. Do you buy, because I don't. I don't buy this deal that Tyson Fury's selling, that he's going to try for an early knockout, and that he's coming in heavier because he wants to not knock Deontay Wilder out. I don't buy that. I think he wants to duplicate the last fight and just not get knocked down.
Well, it would be to his advantage to box, you know, to box from a distance. Because if he gets within range, we already know that missile, what's going to happen with that missile. And Deontay Wilder and his team have a plan, and They're looking to get him out of there, and I think it'll happen pretty early. And in Tyson's case, I've read a lot of comments that where he wants to press the action early, but in my opinion, that would be, he would be at a disadvantage.
All talk.
Hey, the champ is here, Deontay, but I do want to give you a chance to talk about your next great fighter, Gervonta Tank Davis. Tell us about him.
Gervonta Davis, exceptional young fighter. Just recently, there was an incident, and it was a terrible incident a couple weeks ago at the Super Bowl. He made a terrible mistake. We don't condone those kind of things.
Put his hands on a young lady. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And he's was very, very apologetic about it when I had spoke with him. And again, he had made a terrible mistake, and we talked about it and came up with some measures to make better decisions, you know, when you get put in the situation. And it's about education and working with the young fighters and not putting themselves in those kind of situations and just learning from your mistakes and becoming a better person, a better father, you know, because he has a daughter himself. And, we talked about setting a positive example, being a young role model for the youth that's out there. You know, so he's looking to change some things in his life, and we're behind him 100%, and I'm looking forward to next steps.
Muscle pain? I'm talking stopping your tracks. I'll never work out again. Oh my God, what am I going to do kind of pain? This is the kind of pain Dr. Jason Wersland was in when he created Theragun, the deep muscle massager that's unlike anything you've ever felt. Theragun isn't a cheap massager that just tickles your muscles. Our handheld percussive device uses a scientifically calibrated combination of speed, depth, and power to release the deepest muscle tension. It's this simple. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out, an injury, or just everyday life, you can use Theragun. Theragun is the preferred muscle recovery device for over 250 professional sports teams and is used by hundreds of thousands of satisfied customers around the world to reduce pain, increase range of motion, and soothe aching muscles. Try Theragun risk-free for 30 days or your money back by going to theragun.com/cadence. For a limited time, listeners to Speak for Yourself get a free charging stand with the purchase, a $79 value. That's theragun.com/cadence, theragun.com/cadence, CADENCE.
We're joined by the baddest man on the planet, the heavyweight champion of the world, Deontay Wilder, who faces Tyson Fury this Saturday for heavyweight supremacy, only on pay-per-view or via the Fox Sports app. Champ, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Looking forward to it. The polite respect kind of went out the window yesterday. Is it because we're so close to the fight, the animosity is getting turned up?
Yes, you know, it's everything you said, yeah, it's correct. You know, it's getting so close. You know, it's Thursday now. Saturday is the fight. I've been thinking it was Thursday for like 2 days now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's been, you know, the anticipation for it, you know, the promotion that's been involved with the two big sport network, Fox, ESPN, you know, all the loving crowd that's came out, that have came out, you know, all over the world. You know, it's ready. The emotions came out, you know, in that press conference. You know, all the other press conferences, we know, we was cordial with each other, you know. I like Fury, though, you know what I'm saying? You know, and like I've told you before,
I know.
You know, especially dealing with the heavyweight division, where we were and where we are now, it's a big difference. And we need two characters like ourselves to entertain the crowd, but not only entertain, but when it's time to show up, we're definitely going to show up.
Now, look, you just said it, and you said that at the Super Bowl when we were talking, that you like Fury, but you got a strange way of showing that, you know, because the way it went down yesterday, did he touch any buttons with you? Because it certainly looked like you got under his skin yesterday.
Well, I definitely got under his skin, you know, with certain things, but, you know, certain things I just keep to myself when it comes to certain fighters, you know, especially when they're dealing with their personal lives, and so, you know, I keep it, but, you know, it was just one of those things where, you know, you bring your emotions out and you bring your best piece out at that time. Just let him know that, you know, this is a remembrance. You know, I had to remind him where he were at some point in time and who brought him brought him to the big time box? Who put the food on his table for not only himself but his family in a harsh time in his life? And I'll do it over and over again for him, just like I've done for a lot of other fighters, giving them the opportunity when I had less opportunity. Many people say, why haven't you unified? And it's a simple question, because I haven't had the opportunity to do so as all the other guys, because of the power I display, my demeanor about myself, and my warrior mindset, and my king demeanor, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, some would say you crossed the line because you went personal. I wouldn't call it that, but you went all in. Why the choice to go all in on a Wednesday press conference?
Yeah, because I heard an interview, and he was talking about how he brought me to big time boxing. Right. And, you know, and I kind of found it offensive for him to say so when, you know, we know where we came, how far we've came. He know the journey that he've came from, you know, and he know why he's in this position. Not only did I bring him back, but I did something that a lot of champions wouldn't do. I gave him 50-50. Mm. I said, bro, I'm going to bring you back, and I'm going to give you half of the pie. Mm. How many people would do that? You know what I'm saying? That's just my heart as a champion, my heart as a person, to look at a person that's down, you know what I'm saying, down on his shield. You know, he was overweight. You know, he was abusing himself with drugs, and he was contemplating about killing himself. And I knew he was one of the best in the division. I just didn't want to see a man like that, you know, go down in history to do so much to do a great deed in boxing, and then just to destroy himself like that. So I wanted to bring him back, and not only bring him back, I wanted to give him half of the pie, and let's make the best of the remainder of boxing.
And then whoop him up.
Deontay, I think most sports fans start out at some level as little kids, as athletes. And we all have these big dreams. I was a kid, oh, I'm going to be in the Hall of Fame, the NFL, blah, blah. Didn't make it quite. You are actually right on the cusp of realizing perhaps the greatest dream that a boxer could have. The whole world is watching this fight. It's like a Super Bowl. It's like a big-time Muhammad Ali fight, Mike Tyson fight. What is that feeling like to reach the pinnacle of your sport and have the whole world waiting to see your performance?
It's an absolute honor, and it's an amazing feeling, you know, just to be where I am now, and just to reflect on where I came from, you know. We all have stories about how we started and where we are now. We always say started from the bottom, and now we're here, you know, at the top. And, you know, to be in this position, it's like I've been marinating for years. I've been seeing other guys, you know, get to a certain level of fame and fortune, and, you know, I never complained. And I sat back, you know, I never hated on anyone. I always show love, always show respect, because my energy is of that. I come with a positive energy, a positive mind, and a positive spirit, knowing that, you know, God don't make mistakes. And I know my time will come, and it's here. And now that it's here, I'm taking full advantage of it. But, you know, to be honest, to be in this position and have so much around me at this moment in time, you know, and then be acknowledged by my work, you know, that I've done thus far, you know, it don't allow me to obtain the big head or feel like I'm better than anyone. I'm still the same old me. I still do the same old regular things that I do. I never feel like I'm higher than anyone in this room, you know what I'm saying? It's all love and positive energy for me. And I know this is where I'm supposed to be. You know, I like I said before, we all have greatness in us, for greatness is only determined by service. And that's just each and every time that I'm in my occupation, or even outside of my occupation, I want to provide my greatness. I'm a leader, you know, I lead by example. I'm a trendsetter, you know, I've always been that way. My father always taught me and my brothers to never be like no one else. Be yourself, because it's more comfortable being in your own skin, being yourself, knowing what you can do and what you can't do. And what you can't do, you can train yourself. They say practice makes perfect. And you can do that within your household and then bring it outside of your household. I never want to carry that burden on me that I live beyond my means, or I do things that are not of me. And then when I go home, I have to take that vest off and say, you know, nobody's looking. I can be myself. It's too hard for that, you know what I'm saying? So I've always abide by my principle, my morals and goal as a man, as a father, as someone to look up, or even as a role model. Many people don't want to be labeled as role model because, I mean, we're human. We're going to make mistakes along the way. And, you know, when we make mistakes and when you have a certain profile in life and you make mistakes, people always throwing sticks and stones at you, you know? And that's the reason why a lot of people don't want to be role model, but I tell people, for me, if you want to consider me as a role model, you got to take me wholeheartedly as I am. I am who I am. I'm not perfect. I let that be knowledgeable. And, you know, and we can work together as people, as a human race, and to grow as what we want to be, you know?
Man, you up here testifying. You just caught the Holy Ghost, it felt like, man. I mean, I ain't going to lie to you. And you know what? I respect you so much and fully. But physically, you're right here. I just touched you. He's right in front of all of us. But emotionally, mentally, we haven't been in this position before, fighting for a heavyweight championship of the world in front of millions of people. Where are you emotionally right now and mentally preparing for this fight?
Emotionally and mentally, I'm just ready to go. I mean,
so if we can fight right now, you ready to fight right now?
I'm ready to go.
You don't want to build anymore?
You know, for me, like the week of the fight is like, it's like torture for me. You know what I'm saying? Because it's the preparation for the fight. People don't understand, like, as a fighter, like, we go through so much as fighters. You know, it's more than just we get in the ring and we beating up on each other and making a lot of money. It's more than that. You know, a lot of people are like, you know, some people don't even want to see you on vacation. Like, man, get in the ring. You fight. You're supposed to be in the gym training. Mm-hmm. I'm like, but we got outside of boxing, we have a family, you know, that we have to take care of and certain obligations that we have to fulfill, you know, and it's not just consist of just being in the ring all the time and training and different things like that. And people don't understand, like, the hard work that it takes to stay relevant, to be a fighter for one, and to stay relevant. Because I say all the time, we risk our lives for others' entertainment. And it's boxing is just, it's not a game. It's not a sport where you go in there and you're going to play some games.
Oh, we know.
You can't play you do, boxing.
Come on.
Nah,
bro.
Nah. On, yeah, man. You don't play boxing.
Deontay, I want to ask you this while you're in this mindset. We just had Leonard Ellerbe up here, and I don't want to disrespect Floyd in any way. Floyd Mayweather carried this sport for a long time. But I believe the heavyweight can carry it even higher because of the knockout power, because of the 100, 200-year history of the heavyweight champion being the baddest man on the planet. Don't you think you or Fury, if this fight goes off the way that we think it will carry the sport back and benefit the entire sport?
Most definitely. I truly believe in that. You know, they say when you have a rich heavyweight division, so does all the other division live. You know, the money has grown, the popularity has grown, you know, in all divisions. And, you know, everything is, the way it's forming and everything is blossoming like a beautiful flower. Like, it's amazing to be a fighter at this point in time and to see all the fans is coming together where new people meet, where new people around meet old, and they meet new people to gather around all around the world. You know, it's a beautiful thing to bring the low class with the middle class with the high class, and we all commune together as one. And you go for your side, and that other side go for their side. So it's a beautiful thing to see in this beautiful sport of boxing. And I think it always has been the saying, you know, that when you have a strong heavyweight in the division, you know, long live the whole division as a whole.
So yesterday, Tyson was asked about a racial dynamic in this fight. He was asked at the press conference. I asked him about it, but again, at the press conference. Let's hear what he said, and it seemed like you seem to be shaking your head.
I'm not reading into all this this racial thing with a black man versus a white man on Black History Month, and you know I will refuse to go into any sort of a thing about it. You know, we are two human beings, two heavyweights on the top of our game. This is not a racial war. This is two heavyweight boxers going toe to toe for all the jewels in heavyweight boxing. Nothing more, nothing less.
What do you think of that response?
Well, I think he just misinterpreted the whole situation about Black History Month, you know, and me being involved, me as a black man and being involved as a champion and really celebrating this month. This is my month, you know what I'm saying? This is me setting history in my month. And I don't think he really understood that, you know. When the journalists stated his question, he didn't come in a way of where it can be racist, you know what I'm saying? He came in for us just to celebrate this month, you know what I mean, to uplift it, and he wanted to see what how I thought of it and how much it means to me. I mean, and I want to set history in this, you know, I am Black history. You know what I'm saying? I've been Black history and I'm going to continue to be that each and every time. And, you know, I just think he took it in the wrong way.
That's now, why do you feel that the lead narrative hasn't been raised when in years past and fights of old, Black fighter, white fighter, we're going to sell that as our lead narrative. Why not this time?
I mean, One specific reason I think is that, you know, he's a gypsy. And anybody know anything about gypsy, they're traveling people. And they get treated just as bad as we do, you know what I'm saying? Although I feel, you know, we have been treated way worse than any culture, you know, any race. And, you know, we have the proof and the artifacts to prove that, you know what I'm saying? The pictures still go on. But him being as a gypsy, you know, people treat his people, you know, in a wrongful way, and in a way that, you know, a human being shouldn't treat a person. And I think that's, you know, with this situation, me and being him, I don't think it clashes to be racist or anything, because, you know, we all go through things in life, man. It's the human race. We all think y'all just don't need it though. Yeah, this fight sells itself. Exactly.
The thing we were talking even before you came on. This is the first time I really remember where both fighters are likable.
Yeah.
In terms of, that's usually one guy's the bad guy, one guy's the good guy. We don't even have that element here. Both of y'all have big personalities.
Right.
Hell, you've even said you halfway like to do it. Now, he annoys me, and I hope you knock him out. Please put him down so I win this money I'm about to bet. So can we get a fight prediction? What round so I know which round to bet on? When are you putting him to sleep?
Now, I want to correct something. You said I halfway. Like, I like him. I like him as a person. You know, I mean, I really like him as a person, as a human being. I even invited him to the after party. I've been planning this many years to fight him, and we joined it together at an after party or something, and being able to commune with each other or whatever, you know, and the love on each other, because we're gonna do it when we release our energy in the ring, you know, all the negativity that we have amongst each other, and we release it in the ring, we're gonna embrace each other, we're gonna love each other. Like we can say, we told each other we love each other in the ring, and that's the beautiful thing about this sport, where we can have so much animosity, and we can bring up so many old memories and current, you know, things that has happened in our life. But when we release that energy amongst each other in the ring, all that goes away.
Okay, release that right hand, please.
Yeah, see that.
Third round.
Second round. How much you gonna like it when he said he gonna press you and knock you out in the second round?
I mean, I love it. I love that. I love that because it follows into my plan. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. As he come forward, I don't have to do much but to bring it.
Don't do that.
Champ! Deontay Wilder! Thank you so much! Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back with us. All right, Darnell.
Yes, sir.
Take it away, homeboy.
Yeah, let's move to a troubling story. NFL offensive lineman Greg Robinson was arrested in Texas for possession of 157 pounds of marijuana with intent to sell. Robinson was the number 2 overall pick in 2014, but had recently been informed by the Browns he was going to be released. He was arrested along with former NFL and CFL wide receiver Quan Bray. These guys both made it to the pros, so I want to ask you guys, how does something like this happen?
Guy made $29 million in the NFL.
Yeah.
And is now trying to, he's the Nate Newton of the modern day Nate Newton.
Yeah.
How? I don't have, stupidity is my only answer.
Yeah, let me do my job, which is to tell you how it is, not how it could be. And coming from the West Coast, we have a subculture of gangs, and I think a lot of people know about that. When I got into the league, I had to realize the people from those gangs, from my neighborhood, were trying to gently lean on me to be a part of their subculture and to help them out in terms of money. I had to cut it all off. Now, knowing a lot of my teammates, including one of my best friends who was arrested for 10 years in drug kingpin charges from the South, their subculture is a lot of the gang, the drug trafficking leaning on them. So what happens is this. Your teammates and friends know about these dudes that hang with you. One day he comes to you and say, man, you just got a check for $6 million. Can you loan your boy $100,000? $100,000 for what? To do the things that we did growing up or the things that I'm still associated with. You say no to that, you feel a certain type of way. You say yes to that, you're like, look, here's the money. Oh, I'm gonna triple it for you, big dog. I'll come right back. It happened. My best teammate went down for 10 years for things just like this. stupidity's a part of it, but in totality, they don't understand the full consequences. And they think they're actually, in one way, helping someone else out. No parallel except the fact that he went to Auburn, Greg went to Auburn, the dude that got caught with Greg went to Auburn. It's a lot of this Southern subculture.
He understands the consequences. You just don't think you're going to get caught. That's what happened. So after my second year in the league, a guy that I was tight with, went to JUCO with, I ain't going to say his name. If he watching, he know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
He called me. He wanted 50 grand. And I said, what you want that for? He said, I'm going to flip it. I already knew what that meant because we used to roll together. I know exactly what it meant. And I thought about it. I really thought about getting. He was like, bro, I'm going to shoot you 100 back in like 3 weeks. I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Didn't do it. I ain't talked to him the whole time I was planning. Like, just reconnected with him like 2 years ago. He's doing well. I wanted to help him, but if something happened, I'm getting in trouble for this. And the $100,000 that I'm getting back is not worth what I'm taking away from my wife and my kids. And so that happens so much, but so you don't, much. When you come from what you just said, that type of environment, you don't want to tell them no because you don't think I'm going to get caught. And when you get caught, you sitting there like, damn.
Lord.
And so it's just a bad, bad look for him.
I think that situation for him is different because he was involved. It wasn't hooking up a friend, take this money, do it for a friend. He was there. You know, I was sitting there looking at this. I was like, how does it happen? He certainly is trying to flip. He's trying to make a flip. Yeah. And he didn't trust anybody to make that flip. So he got, by the reports, he got one of his close guys that drives for the driving company to drive him, and he's got his homie with him. He didn't want somebody to take his stuff. So all this really is somebody who felt like they had enough money and an opportunity where they could fly under the radar and get to where he was going and flip it. So
6'5", 350 pounds.
What radar?
Yeah,
second
got pick caught in the up draft. In Texas.
That's a radar.
Yeah. Texas.
That's a.
This needs to be a lesson on to every player. Like, you're going to get in trouble.
It needs to be a lesson.
You're going to get. This has to be a lesson. You're going to get caught,
and it happens
man.
So often is at least the pool, at least the baby.
Sam Hurd is in a federal prison right now because you're going to get caught.
Joining the show now is Fox Sports NBA analyst Rick Bucher. Let's talk some hoops.
Here it is.
Sponsored by ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, let's move to Cleveland, where Cavaliers head coach John Beilein has resigned after a tumultuous and disappointing tenure. Beilein raised some eyebrows after calling his players a bunch of thugs during a film session, and reportedly, players had recently taken to playing songs with the word thugs in the lyrics whenever the coach was nearby. All right, Marcellus, is getting rid of Beilein the smartest way to win or a bad look for the Cavaliers?
Bad look for the Cavaliers. This is a sinking ship. They were supposed to be in Plan B post-LeBron to save face and hopefully have value and potentially make a push. Not looking good. What you got?
Not the smartest hire, but the smartest fire. If you know something's not going to work, you need to move on. And hiring a college coach at this point in the NBA, a top college coach, if you're going to be that good at that level, you can't possibly be versed in the NBA game. And you've got to coach guys who know the game better than you do. The second you have a game plan or you draw up a play and they go, that doesn't work at this level.
Yeah.
You've lost that team. So the fact that they cut their losses and they moved ahead. Look, Dan Gilbert, the owner, has wanted to hire Tom Izzo forever. He's smart enough to know, I ain't doing that. I got my gig at Michigan State. I'm good.
Yeah.
John Beilein decided, you know what? I'm going to cash in. I'm going to take that NBA check. And so ultimately he made that move. But it is a difficult transition. More guys miss than not. But let's be clear about one thing. This ain't about saying thugs versus slugs. Like, you think Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler listen to the same music or wear the same clothes or speak the same language? If you as a coach can make me better, then I'm going to listen. And if I don't think you know the NBA game as well as I do, then I'm probably not.
I'm glad you're highlighting that moment of truth where the Letterman jacket gets you no respect at the pro level. Like, we don't care about those stripes. They don't qualify at this level.
Exactly.
And even if a guy doesn't have the greatest game, sometimes he may have the greater acumen than a coach. And once you're in those moments and coach takes you the wrong direction,
yep,
that starts to be infectious.
I got a little different take in terms of John Beilein, if he were 50 years old going to the NBA, I think he would have had more success. I think being an older coach with all that college experience and then probably valuing practice more than NBA players do, particularly NBA players on a rebuilding team that's coming, still got a LeBron James hangover. Yeah. We used to be important. And when LeBron was here, we didn't practice after a game or the next day, blah, blah. And Beeline wants to come in and actually teach the game.
Yeah.
And they weren't interested, particularly coming from this older dude. And so I think it's a bad look for them. But I also think in order for them to win and move forward, they had to fire Beeline.
It's not just a rebuilding team. It's with a couple of holdovers. You can't coach Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love the same way that you do the Colin Sexton and the young guns.
Yeah.
So you're caught in between, and you've never done this before? A quick story. Mike Montgomery, he coached the Warriors, came from Stanford, considered a great coach, and is a great coach. I was there when he coached his first exhibition game. And afterward, tie was askew. He was eating an energy bar. He was worn out. This is an exhibition game. He goes, man, if they run something, you can't stop it. They just keep running it. I was like, that's NBA 101.
Right.
It was brand new to him. He wasn't ready for that. And as soon as you miss once, you lose these guys real quick.
Part of me felt like they bullied this guy out of his job, which, you know, I ain't gonna cry no river for him. He's a grown man. He's gonna get millions of dollars. All right, welcome back.
Yeah.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Emmitt Smith.
You? Yeah, dude. No.
But first,
are you?
Give Marcellus Big Dummy of the Day.
Ain't gonna be able to do it.
Yep.
Big Dummy of the Day goes to the person that's set up here. Oh, you was real bad talking to Water. Talking about, Tyson Fury annoyed me. You just said yesterday, didn't you?
Are you sure did?
Did you?
Sure.
No,
sure.
I didn't.
All right, then.
Could have reached you from over here, too.
All right, let's talk some Emmitt Smith, who just told Dak Prescott to maybe take another perspective on his contract talks and settle for less money. Reportedly, Dak has turned down some big offers from Jerry Jones and the Cowboys, and the franchise tag has been looming lately. All right, Marcellus, you think Dak gets franchised next week?
Let me be quick with this. No. He doesn't get franchise tag. No, Dak is close to signing the deal, but he's not going to budge from his number. And I respect Dak for doing that because he has shown proper value. So until they get to $35 million, no. And I don't think they're going to tag him.
Well, no tag.
No tag. No, it's going to be a real deal. Why $35 million? $35 million. You're going to piece it, and it still adds up the same. Give him his long-term deal.
He may play poorly, and you save some money. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Uncle Jimmy. I know you agree with me about Dak Prescott, hopefully. Anyway.
I got a message for Dakery Fitzgerald Prescott.
Oh, what's that?
Do not listen to the words that is coming out of Emmitt Smith's mouth. This is the same Emmitt Smith that's telling you to take less money. I could be wrong, but didn't he hold out to get more money?
Yes, he did.
Look here. You mess around, you listen to what Emmitt Smith say if you want to. Your ass gonna end up on Dancing with the Stars doing the nay-nay with Wendy Williams. Okay?
Oh, man, that's cold.
Look, Dak, I know I done called you dumb in the past. But I doggone it, don't be plumb dumb, son. Look, the truth is you need to hold out. Play hard to get. That's the only way you're gonna get Jerry Jones out. Okay?
Right.
Let's be real, okay? Look, up until now, you done tried to do everything right. You been living by the book. You been talking all prim and proper. Just look all pure and innocent. And we all know, man, Jerry Jones ain't about that life. Jerry Jones a freak. That means you have to step your freak game up. Look at Zeke. Look what he did. Come with the little midriff t-shirt. Got that little nose ring. We got that little cowboy backpack. Went down to Cabo. Jerry Jones lost his mind. Begged him to come back. Paid him everything. Meanwhile, what was you doing? Sitting at home doing your best June Cleaver. Hat on an apron. A pearl necklace. Making cookies. Playing with the beaver. Helping him with his homework. Look, man, Jerry's a freak. You gotta catch him. Bust out some leather. some chaps, hand tap him to the bed, get some wax, put it on his cowboy toys. If you do that, he'll make that noise. He'll say, yeah, ha! How about that cowboy? If you do that, you'll get your seat at Jerry Jones' dinner table and replace Tony Romo. Matter of fact, you get your $42
million. All right, we gotta go.
You gotta be about it. I gotta make Jerry scream about it.
I gotta give Emmett my approval rating for Emmett. Yeah. GOAT status, 87. Job performance. Jerry gave him a job. He handled it well.
He did do his job.
All-time greatness. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Emmett's character's impeccable.
I'll give you that. This is where we disagree.
Yeah, authenticity, you know, down to 17.
What do you mean down to 17? He's not one word out of his mouth was genuine. He is just doing his job.
That is coming out of his mouth.
No, all right, the internet agrees with me. Has to be
going.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow. That's it for us.